Cape Talk. Inspiration Wednesday.
We're less than 2 months away from one of the country's most important events for athletes with disability, the Otanequa Cycle Challenge, which is growing from strength to strength every year, attracting wheelchair cyclists and other adaptive racers, including a growing international field. Now, you may be aware, of course, that adaptive cyclists already compete regularly in many of our major cycling events. Anybody who's watched the Cape Town Cycle Tour will know that. But this is the first and still the only event exclusively for competitors with disabilities. And one of the people who will be on the start line this year is standing by to share his story with us and talk to us not only about this race and its importance, but about his passion for his sport. Great pleasure to have on the line hand cyclist Stuart McCready. Stuart, so great to have you on the show. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Pippa. Nice to be there.
It was up until the age of 24, you were an extremely able, active young man, able-bodied young man, very active in sport. I believe you particularly loved swimming. But then everything changed for you in 1992. Stuart, can you tell us briefly what happened?
Yeah, very briefly. I was basically in a car, and I was going too fast, and I came around the corner, and I lost control, and I hit a tree, and I broke my back. Kind of in line with my belly button is the best way to describe it, and lost obviously all feeling and all movement. So sort of a complete break of the spinal cord. So paraplegic, basically.
Okay, now your spinal cord, as you said, was severed completely. When you came to after that accident, Stuart, and doctors told you that news, what did they tell you was your prognosis?
It was quite funny because my doctor was very... We kind of had a very honest relationship right from the beginning, and and she just said, she was very frank. She said, you know, you've broken your back, it's a complete lesion, and you are never going to walk again. And I kind of sensed that I wasn't. You know, I didn't think that I was, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
You know, it just felt pretty final.
Yeah. Stuart, I mean, for a 24-year-old guy who's lived a very active life, who's loved his sport and been somebody who loved the outdoors and an active lifestyle, that must have been, to say the least, incredibly difficult news to swallow, although it sounds like you accepted it and recognized it for what it was. But talk to us a little bit about how you felt, particularly about the loss of mobility, given your love of sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think... You know, it sort of settles in quite slowly. I mean, I think initially you're so busy dealing with, you know, your immediate kind of sort of reality that you know, sport actually seems quite a far way away. Mm. But you definitely are aware that, you know, the freedom of movement and the speed and the, you know, that kind of, that those sort of things that are associated with so many sports, that, you know, that was something that you just slowly start missing, I think, as you sort of live with it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you try and find things that, you know, give you excitement or you know, the intensity of a sport or the sweat, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Now, okay, so you went on, I know you completed your studies at CPUT, you forged a career for yourself in the advertising world. I know that exercise must have formed a big part of your rehabilitation as you adapted to your new way of navigating the world. At what point did you reach the point where you were managing the day-to-day stuff to the point that you could start thinking about looking for an outlet and looking at things like sport, adaptive sport? How long was it?
I think for different people, there are different sort of time periods. But in my case, I mean, I was fairly active once I got out of the hospital, which was after about 4 months. And then, you know, I would sort of do little pushes up the mountainside, up those dirt roads with friends. And, you know, so quite active outdoorsy sort of experiences there.
Mm-hmm.
But no sport as such. But I did get into swimming quite. Sorry, when I say no sport, I mean no sort of kind of, you know, group sport activities.
Yeah.
Like, you know, basketball or anything like that. But I did do a lot of swimming, and that was kind of my, you know, that was my go-to sort of exercise, I suppose, just because the water is obviously very nice. You know, it's very free. You've got freedom of movement in the water that you don't have obviously in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
So, and it was nice. You were out of the chair, it loosened up the body, and so it was, good for the head as well.
Yeah, I bet. Then, I think it was about 2007 that somebody introduced you to adaptive cycling. Tell us how that encounter happened and what you felt that first day.
That's interesting because, I mean, the swimming was cool, you know, and I was going and I was enjoying it, but you know, it doesn't have the intensity that you you get for the cycling, and I was putting on a little bit of weight. like a sort of a passion for, you know, pizza and red wine doesn't help.
It'll do that, yeah.
Yeah, it'll do that, you know. And because you're in the chair all the time, it kind of like, you know, it doesn't go away as quickly. So, and then you know, a friend of mine actually got a hand cycle, and then I saw him in it, and I was kind of jealous immediately. And then it's a long sort of story, but I mean, I eventually found a very, very cheap one that I actually just borrowed it from this guy. And he, you know, I had to fix it up with ropes, and I put a kind of a bamboo stick in the back of it, and a piece of shirt, you know, as a warning sort of flag.
Yeah.
And then rode from my house down to the harbor, which is like about, oh gosh, it's not even a kilometer, or maybe it's two, mm-hmm. and if you count coming back. And I was like, oh, this is incredible. I mean, even at that stage, it was nice. Just out the house, not in the wheelchair, moving fast, you know, just out there. And from there, it just sort of developed, you know. Then it was get another chair, another bike, I suppose, get another bike. And sort of it progressed like that, yeah, but very quickly, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, by this point, cycling was already a recognized sport at the Paralympics.
Yes.
How quickly did you get good enough to start thinking, I want to compete at the highest level of this sport?
Oh, it was a pretty fast track process, actually. I mean, I still am a little obsessive, and so I started in about end of 2007, and by 2012 I was at the Paralympics in London.
Wow.
It was fast, but there was a lot of obviously work, you know, to get there and all that.
Mm.
But yeah, it was amazing. So that, yeah.
Okay, so Paralympics, you've competed in World Cups. I believe you won a bronze medal in Spain. You came fourth in a World Championship the same year as that bronze. You've really got to the top level of this sport. I'm sure you're no longer riding a bicycle with a piece of bamboo and a shirt on the back of it. Tell us about the bike you compete with today, Stuart.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know. The bamboo stick and the shirt are long gone. it's almost embarrassing what these bikes cost. But you know, you build them up slowly over a period of time, and that's you know. But I currently ride a bike with a carbon body, mm-hmm. frame, and an aluminium fork, and it weighs about 12 kilograms, and if you've got your racing wheels on, it probably comes in at about 10.5. So that's pretty good, and from a cost point of view, well, I mean, with current exchange rates, and if you had to buy like a brand new bike now, similar to mine, but obviously the latest models and that, you'd honestly, with import and everything, you'd be in for about, this is the embarrassing part, about 160,000,
wow.
170,000. But that's top of the range. That is top of the range. So, you know, a cost is a massive sort of prohibitor when it comes to the sport, unfortunately. Look, there are cheaper bikes. You know, you can pick up a bike for 30,000, but mm-hmm. it's still a commitment, you know. If you look at what you can get racing, you know, normal cycles for.
Yeah. I mean, same, as you say, an able-bodied cyclist also spends vast sums of money as the bikes get better and better and lighter, and their times get more competitive. Talk to us. I'm sure you have a training regime, just as one of those cyclists does, to prepare yourself for a big event like the Otanikwa. How many hours do you put in per day or per week in preparation for an event like that?
The Otanikwa is a 42K race, so it's not a massive distance actually for the hand cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you think we do the August or the Cape Cycle Tour, and that's 110. You know, so the 42K is fast and hard. So I'm currently putting in about between 10 and 11 hours a week,
okay.
I suppose, which equates to about 250 kilometers, and probably about between an hour and an hour and a half. 6 days a week.
Okay, sure.
And different intensity as well. You know, some rides will be, you know, sort of recovery. Others will be intervals. It'll vary.
It's still a lot to accommodate in a life that also includes a full-time job, Stuart, so a big effort required. How do you find other road users treat you when they see you out on the road on a training ride? I mean, we so many often have conversations about cyclists, able-bodied cyclists, and their concerns about how cars treat them on the road and criminals as well. Is it a factor for you as well?
Yeah, look, if a criminal came along, I wouldn't have much of a chance, unless I was going downhill. But we've got our flags now. We've got proper flags.
Good.
Orange flags. So I've got that, and we've got a little flashing red light that we kind of put in the back as well. We've got rear view mirrors, so you kind of know what's going to hit you, I suppose. Maybe a small consolation. actually, we get looked. I think we get noticed a bit more because we're a bit more unusual, and I think people pay a little bit more attention to us. And I certainly don't have any sort of horror stories like you will hear from cyclists. You know, cyclists will tell you, oh, you know, this guy came here, it was so close, etc. I've had one or two close calls, obviously, as you will. I mean, I've been on the road for almost 11 years. So, I mean, you're going to have one or two incidents, obviously. But generally, touch wood, motorists are pretty good.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, the Otanequa, you've said 42Ks, fast and hard. Let's talk a little bit about what race makes this race so special. The fact that it is a dedicated adaptive cycling race and not sort of an afterthought to an able-bodied race, but it's your own race specifically designed for you. How special does that make it for you?
Yeah, I think, that does make it special, but I think what makes it, what also makes it special is that, you know, everyone in the country who's got a hand cycle comes down to George, you know, for the race. It's almost like a sort of a pilgrimage. It's an annual gathering of, you know, and it's a chance for all of us. We'll see each other on Facebook or on Strava or wherever it is. But we get a chance to sort of, you know, unite in the flesh, so to speak, and kind of, you know, and race against one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that's what makes it, you know, extra attractive.
Now, of course, you won the event in record time in 2016. You won again last year, if I'm not mistaken. How are you feeling going into this year's race?
No, I'm feeling good. I mean, I'm strong. Look, you never know who's... I mean, you have a fair idea who's going to be there. We haven't got that many people in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
But guys are getting better and guys are getting faster. So it's always going to be interesting.
And of course, I believe that more and more international hand cyclists are coming to compete as well. So that must make it pretty exciting for you.
Yeah, at one stage, actually, a few years back, we had quite a few coming over. I don't know who's coming out this year. I don't know if anyone is. Normally, the event is held in February. And there was a little bit of a problem, and anyway, it's now being held in September.
Okay.
So that may have been the reason, but traditionally there have been international cyclists, and yes, that absolutely makes it more exciting.
Okay, now given that you say you all greet each other and see each other, this is a pilgrimage, I'm hoping maybe you might be able to answer the listener question that's just popped in on my email from Sue, because Sue is recalling an interview I did a year or two ago with a young cyclist named Zach, who had such a great attitude, she says, and I've often wondered what became of him. Zach Legwood, he must be about 12, I think, by now. Do you know him, Stuart, and do you know if he's competing this year? Because I know he was really keen on the Otanequa when we spoke to him last.
Yes, I know. So it's strange. I'm actually looking at a picture of him on the George OCC homepage.
Oh, how funny! Okay.
Yeah. So he's definitely around. His dad's very passionate about Zach riding as well, which helps. I think he's a motivator. I don't know if he's going to be riding in September, but I do know that to answer Sue's question, I do know that. Well, I'm not entirely sure, but I think he actually rode the 94.7. Sure. One of the short, not the long ride. He would have done a smaller ride or something. So he is still around.
I'm so glad to hear it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sue, we'll put a call into Zach's dad as well and just get an update and see if he's taking part. I mean, yes, Stuart, there is a young kid of, when we spoke to him, 10, I think he must be about 12 or 13 by now, lining up with such enthusiasm for this event. You must feed off each other's determination and encourage one another. I'm interested. I mean, what does it mean to you to know that somebody like that is looking to you as the race winner in previous years, as somebody who wants to follow in your path at the Otanikwa? Do you feel a sense of responsibility, or is it just a joy to know that that sort of follow-on is happening with the next generation?
Yeah, it's certainly not responsibility. I don't feel like, oh, obligated. I just think it's nice that, I think it's great that, you know, we can be there and we can, and you know, we're fortunate enough to sort of be in a situation, you know, where we can be there and fast, you know, equipment and performance, etc. And so if other people can see that and it can motivate them and, you know, spark something in them and drive them to, you know, pursue something that they love, that's great, you know.
Yeah. Well, Stuart, I hope it is a successful race for you come 14 September. Thanks so much for making time to chat to us today and hopefully sparking some inspiration to the listeners this afternoon. Great to have you on the show.
Cool. Thanks very much, Pippa.
Stuart McCready, a previous two-time winner of the Otanikwa Cycle Challenge, will be at the start line again in George on the 14th of September. And Sue, we'll try and find out whether Zach will be somewhere in that field as well.